Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNext session on message security, compliance and message protection with Exchange Server 2007. My name is Robin McManus. Let's start this session by going into more detail on exactly what we will be covering. When the Exchange product group was designing Exchange Server 2007, they wanted to make it the best messaging server available. While Exchange has always been very good at routing messages, it could have been made better in terms of active protection. The team responsible for the Edge server development really wanted to make sure businesses could benefit from this active protection. Let me expand on that for a moment. Active protection means that while messages are still in transit, the routing servers, that's the Edge and Hub transport servers, can perform actions on them. The actions might include filtering for content or sender IP address to provide a cleaner messaging stream, or maybe you need help to add a disclaimer to all outbound messages. What the product group wanted to do was make the message stream as clean and secure as it could before messages arrived at the mailbox rather than after, when it's often too late. And importantly, they wanted to do this in a way that it was unobtrusive to both IT and information workers that so rely on email these days. Essentially, this session is about explaining what's in Exchange that achieves these design goals. As with most TechNext sessions, some prior experience at Microsoft Technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. The next slide provides a brief overview of what would be helpful but not essential for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend too much time discussing. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful or to be familiar with, either prior to the session or to reference afterwards. It's important to have some familiarity with Exchange Server 2003, an Exchange 2000 server. This is a level 200 presentation, so it's good to have some understanding of Exchange Server as well. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session into the following agenda items. There are three main topics we'll address today. We'll start with message hygiene. Your email system is constantly being bombarded with unwanted and undesirable message. As a messaging administrator, it's your job to clean that up. Exchange Server 2007 is here to make that job easier. We'll talk about how during the first part of the session. We'll then move on to discuss messaging policies. Following on from recent accounting scandals and global terrorism threats, governments and their agencies require organizations to store and produce on request pertinent email messages. Exchange Server 2007 provides policies to achieve this goal, with simple to set up and administer policies. Finally, we'll look at how messages can be made secure whilst in transit through your organization, between organizations and across untrusted networks like the internet. But before we start, here's some background. The goal with Exchange 2007 was to deliver on three themes. These themes were chosen back in 2003 and have remained constant during the last 2.5 years since Exchange 2003 shipped. The first theme focuses on making sure IT professionals, you, get what you need. You said that email is the most important application in your organization, that without it you face big problems. You say that current systems are too complex and expensive to maintain, and that many of the day-to-day tasks you perform should be better suited to scripted automation, rather than tedious manual configuration. Exchange 2007 is all about giving you that control. Information workers say that they need access not just to email, but also to voicemail and faxes. They don't want to be tied to their desks either. Mobile devices are being widely adopted for good reason. People are mobile. Users want anywhere access to all sorts of messaging data. Finally, users say that setting up a meeting and choosing a room to hold it in can be very frustrating. Trying to tie everyone's schedule together can waste a lot of time. Exchange 2007 aims to make things easier for the information worker. Finally, email needs to be secure. For most of you out there, this is your top concern. Removing spam and viruses to provide a clean message stream needs to be a core design goal for any messaging system these days. This one that Exchange 2007 certainly provides. In addition, you want to be in control of the messaging environment to the extent that you can conform to legal and corporate-wide policies that require you to journal, archive, and search through messages, and this needs to be easy. When Exchange 2007 was being designed, these three themes were kept to the fore, ensuring that Exchange will provide the messaging system you need. This section deals with Exchange Server 2007 security and compliance. But it's worth noting that anywhere access is covered in TechNext session IT Pro EXC 101 and control is covered in section IT Pro EXC 102. The Exchange product group did some research and found that these were the top 5 concerns of Microsoft customers. If you look at the list, you can either see that 4 out of the 5 items are related to this built-in protection issue. spam is obviously a concern, with its knock-on effect of cluttering end-user inboxes, consuming disk space in the stores, and often coming with virus-infected payload. So if Exchange can better address spam, then that can help address storage concerns too. As we saw already, organizations need to be able to conform to any legal and corporate messaging policy requirements, and it's becoming a big issue for you. Last, and no means least, we have securing the perimeter. If undesirable email never arrives in your organization, because Exchange stops at that perimeter, that's a pretty good thing. Before we go on to discuss the Edge Transport Server and how it does this, let's remind ourselves all about the server roles in Exchange 2007. Server roles fall into one and two broad categories. One role is designed to be deployed at the perimeter network, outside the corporate internet with no access to Active Directory, and all the other roles designed to be installed inside the intranet with access to Active Directory. The server in the perimeter network, called the Edge Transport Server, is isolated from Active Directory and functions as a message, hygiene and routing engine. It's responsible for filtering messages that arrive from untrusted networks, like the internet, although it's not part of your Active Directory forest. To ensure that it can deliver to the correct recipient, it needs access to Active Directory information, which is provided by an instance of Active Directory Application Mode, ADAM, installed locally and synchronized with an instance within your intranet. This role can't be combined with others, as that would comprise security to some extent. Connectors are used to route messages to and from the intranet. Message routing within the intranet or between trusted organizations is handled by the hub transport server. This role can be combined with others when required. The client access server role enables non-MAPI clients like POP, IMAP and Outlook Anywhere to connect to Exchange. It functions like a front-end server does in 2003, without all the mailbox and routing elements to slow things down. The mailbox server is more like the traditional Exchange server that we saw in 2003, with an information store and associated public and private stores. However, it doesn't handle non-MAPI client access or message routing. These are handled by other roles. By breaking a single server into distinct functional units, storage, routing, access, the system works better, with a server able to focus on the given task. The unified messaging server is all new, and lets you combine email with both voicemail and fax services. When you install a UM server, you give your users a unified inbox, which links your PBX system with Exchange and handles voice calls, and provides answering services as well as providing voicemail. Next, we'll look at how you might combine these roles to support your organization. Okay, let's put the whole thing together. Now, there's a lot on this slide, so we'll step through the roles one at a time. Let's think about a message that arrives at your organization. The Edge Transport Server sits isolated in the perimeter network, routing messages to and from the internet. Messages are filtered using agents, like the Connection Filtering Agent, which accepts or rejects SMTP connections from remote hosts based on IP addresses. Messages are also filtered based on sender, sender reputation, recipient address, and content. You can also combine third-party antivirus or anti-spam solutions on the Edge Transport Server to provide a clean message stream into your organization. Smaller organizations may not implement Edge servers, preferring instead to use a hosted solution, like Microsoft Exchange Hosted Services. Once the message is deemed safe, the Edge passes it along to the Hub Transport Server. Connectors are defined on both the Edge Transport and the Hub Transport Servers to route messages from the perimeter network into your intranet. Connectors are defined in pairs. For example, a send connector at the hub has a corresponding receive connector at the edge. Communication between the edge and hub are secure and authenticated by default. On arrival at the hub transport server, transport rules are applied to further filter the message, consisting of conditions, actions and exceptions. These rules enable you to create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content does not enter or leave your organization. You can also use transport rules to maintain regulatory conformance. Legal regulations require you to store messages for search and retrieval on demand by the appropriate government agency. You may as well have your own internal organizational regulations that require disclaimers to be attached to all messages or whatever. The transport agents provided in Exchange, running on the Edge and Hub servers, allow you to easily conform to these regulations. You need to install at least one Hub server in each Active Directory site that contains mailbox servers. The Hub transport server now passes the message to the appropriate mailbox server. If the user is currently connected to the mailbox server from MAPI clients, such as Microsoft Outlook 2007, they are noted about the arrival of a new message. If the user is connected via Exchange ActiveSync, Outlook Web Access, or WA, Outlook Anywhere, formerly known as RPC over HTTP, then the client access server is responsible for notifying the user. The message is retrieved by the remote client. The client access server can also ensure that remote users connect to a suitable client access server, one which is in the same site as their mailbox server. This can take the form of either a redirection, that is telling the client which server to use, or proxying. You will also need one client access server in each Active Directory site that contains a mailbox server. Finally, the all-new unified messaging server can link your PBX with your email. If the user is available, calls will be routed to telephones and faxes to fax machines. If the user is unavailable, an email message with the attached voice message will be placed in their mailbox. Outlook, OWA, and EAS clients provide in-messaging controls to hear and respond to these voice messages. We won't configure the UM in this session, although it is covered in TechNet session IT Pro EXC 101 as mentioned earlier. Having discussed server roles, we'll focus on the transport servers now. Let's expand on the role of the edge transport server. A well-designed security infrastructure should deliver on two goals: simple to manage built-in protection and reduce costs. From the edge transport server perspective, if you look at the two concepts of built-in protection and reduced costs and composability, from a built-in protection point of view, the goal of the edge transport server is keeping your email safe, keeping the inbox safe and free from viruses and malware, and obviously free of spam. Providing security by network isolation means trying to get rid of these threats and attacks as far away from Active Directory, your intranet and mailboxes as possible. So being able to be deployed at the perimeter, completely isolated from the rest of your network, is a big benefit that enables Exchange to clean up the traffic as far away from mailboxes as it can. Protecting communications over untrusted networks. If you look at email use on the internet today, and historically, companies communicate in the clear, there is a sense of security, which is interesting since the communications are completely unsecured. Exchange server needs a way to ensure message security over untrusted networks, and so the edge server has the ability to protect this business-to-business communication over both trusted and untrusted networks, keeping email not only safe but secure. Exchange server provides a very simple way to manage these communications with partners by establishing partnerships and enabling the level of security that you require with given partner. And providing a highly available transport reduces the downtime, so the product group have included several features in the transport services. In the edge services specifically, in Exchange 2007 that allow for high availability of messaging. Now let's discuss the hub transport server. From a built-in protection point of view, the hub transport service is the entity responsible for providing confidentiality and tamper-proof communications within the enterprise, and also preventing leakage from happening outside the enterprise. A lot of Microsoft customers complain that it's extremely difficult to manage information security when it comes to deploying either PKI infrastructures, managing certificates, or key management and the expiration of those things. It needs to be easier, otherwise people don't use it. Exchange Server provides a solution for establishing and maintaining a level of security and confidentiality that doesn't require IT staff to manage and maintain any sort of certificates infrastructure. And from preventing leakage outside the enterprise, the hub has built-in rules that enable you to enforce that certain types of communication should never leave the organization, or should only go through secure channels to certain partners or whatever. For retaining the communications you need, again, the hub has the ability to do that, to control where messages should be archived, and it provides a much higher level of granularity than Exchange 2003 does. 2007 improves quite substantially in journaling infrastructure and provides a feature set that enables you to comply with regulatory information retention, and again, all that contributes to you being compliant. And removing the guessing game from routing reduces tremendously the maintenance costs with the email backbone. By having the ability to route based on decided affinity, Exchange Server is going to be far simpler to deploy and manage. And the same thing for edge services. From a point of view of high availability, Exchange Server 2007 has built-in facilities to protect against poison messages, much more advanced message tracking and logging capability, as well as the redundancy of the service in a site and cross sites. And all of that really contributes to a highly available messaging backbone from the transport perspective. Now let's return to the agenda. Now we'll explore the hygiene services, specifically talking about the anti-spam capabilities in Exchange 2007. The Exchange product group set out to provide an enterprise solution for cleaning their message stream. They wanted to have this experience in Exchange 2007, that if you deployed edge services and configured the message hygiene and anti-spam correctly, then that's all you need to do to keep your message stream completely clean and free of spam. That's a big and important goal. And that meant having very high accuracy and protection, very low false positive rates, providing a mechanism for you to better manage the settings, not just the initial provisioning, but for updating the ongoing control of what is and what is not appropriate to come into your organization. So having a mechanism for you to control this more easily was a high priority for the development team. And that included diagnostics for spam, how to define spam thresholds and interface, the ability to quarantine some of the traffic if they are not sure whether it's spam, and the ability to filter on the edge outside your internet before it enters your organization and its connected infrastructure. The goal was to provide a complete solution for anti-spam out of the box for you, and on top of that to offer extensibility so you can also implement third-party hygiene solutions, any anti-spam and antivirus solutions when you deploy Exchange 2007, meaning that you don't have to just run what comes out of the box, but anything you want. If you have a particular technology that you prefer to use, then that will be completely available through the same extensibility framework that the built-in anti-spam features utilize. Here's how they handle things at Microsoft. Microsoft constantly looks at the traffic and monitors what's going on, how much email is spam, and reports show that as much as 85 to 90% of received emails from the internet is likely to be spam. That's a huge volume that they have to handle. And so the task is to keep this as far away from the internal network as possible. And last year alone, the volume of spam grew to 5 to 10 million messages a day. And apparently, that's just for internet connection to the Microsoft.com domain. Currently, the IT department at here are running Exchange Server 2003 and a set of third-party block lists on the internet-connected servers. But they will be moving to Exchange 2007 very soon, and then they'll rely solely on Exchange technology for their anti-spam control. Let's take a look at the 2007 anti-spam controls in the same more detail now. At the connection filtering level, Exchange provides a set of IP-configured allow and deny lists that administrators can control. It also supports the block list providers that can be configured out of the box. And Exchange will come pre-configured with some block lists that will support any third-party block lists. Exchange 2007 also supports the feature for allow lists in which you appoint a bonded sender. So those of you that can automatically always allow those senders to come in through IP filtering layer. An additional feature that is worth mentioning is that Exchange has a background agent for connection filtering that is looking at the traffic, and it learns from traffic patterns. Essentially, it can start to identify the IP addresses of senders that are associated with bad email, and these IPs get added automatically to the block list that provides for the dynamic real-time learning capability at the connection filtering level. Let's look at the protocol filtering next. This is where Exchange provides recipient filtering. In Exchange 2007, you have the ability to push the entire recipient list in a secure way from within the Active Directory infrastructure to the Edge services. By having this list out on the Edge, you're able to automatically drop any messages targeted to non-existing recipient. So if people are doing dictionary attacks or phishing for addresses on your Active Directory, your Edge server will know this right away. If they are unavailable or invalid addresses, and drop the message immediately. In addition to that, Exchange Server supports sender filtering and sender ID. These technologies ship with Exchange 2003, which again are showing up in Exchange 2007. Sender filtering examines the inbound message to determine if the sender is reliable, otherwise drops the connection. Sender ID uses DNS to verify the source of the message. Through protocol analysis, you'll also know whether people are doing connection attacks and trying to hold the SMTP port open. And you'll also see that services will drop these suspect connections rapidly. Let's move on to content filtering now. The third layer in the defense of content filtering, and once the message has got past the connection and protocol filtering, it encounters content filtering, where Exchange, the first time, opens the message and looks at the message content. Now it's worth noting that by the time the traffic has arrived at content filtering, Exchange will now already filtered upwards of 70% of the spam that comes into a typical customer site. So it's extremely valuable to have fine-tuned, correctly functioning connection filtering and protocol filtering layers. However, when it comes to content filtering, Exchange Server is going to use the machine learn instant messaging filter, the smart screen, to look at the heuristics for blocking patterns to help determine which spam campaigns try and get around half defenses. The server can combine assembly and domain reputation information from a database which contains lists of domains that we know to have been labeled as phishing domains. In addition to having the features such as the smart screen filter, Exchange will allow you to create customer link sites, so you can add in text for filtering bad words. And you can also enter their own preferred domains, So anything in this domain is okay to come through, or whatever. Also important is to note, from a filtering perspective, new in Exchange 2007, is the ability to filter on safe senders. It allows safe sender emails to come through. Most people know that Outlook has a feature on the client where you can add a sender to My Safe Sender list, and what happens is when the mail gets to the customer, it will determine if that mail should go to the inbox or junk mail. But the reality is that you want the decision to be made before it's filtered by the spam filter. Out of the perimeter network, Exchange 2007 provides this mechanism. It aggregates all the safe senders within the enterprise and pushes that information out to the Edge server. The Edge server will always respect that list on a user-per-user basis. So the safe senders I have may not be the same as my co-worker has, but the server will allow content that you consider to be okay pass through and come to your inbox, which is hugely valuable in reducing false positives. Another important feature is having automatic updates on the content filter to preserve a high level of accuracy. So in Exchange 2007, the smart screen is updated more than once a day to ensure a high degree of accuracy. From a management point of view, as with everything else in Exchange 2007, the hygiene features are configurable through the shell or the console, so you have the ability to control using the command line or by means of the UI. Exchange 2007 introduced some quite advanced things. Things like the ability to control spam settings on an organizational level. So you can say, for example, that all email targeted from your users in your Russian subsidiary will have different spam level settings to those targeted using your North America subsidiary. And in Exchange 2007, you will have the capability of setting different values for different organizational units within the enterprise. The ability to configure exceptions and bypass recipients, so that we can say that any mail targeting this particular recipient gets treated that way, and any mail that targets this particular DL gets treated this way. It's very useful to have that level of granularity and control. As we saw earlier, Exchange will respect the safe sender list from Outlook right on the edge, so it will definitely reduce the false positives quite dramatically. It's a very intuitive user interface that was built in the Exchange Management Console on top of Mona. So everything you do via the UI, you can do through the shell. It's a very intuitive UI, and it improves substantially over the administration experience with spam that was provided with Exchange 2003 and earlier. From a manageability point of view, there are substantial amounts of events and alerts, also logging, that is exposed via MOM. That's the Microsoft Operations Manager. And from a reporting point of view, a lot has been added. Quite a lot of built-in reports that were lacking before, such as having the ability to know what were your top spam IP senders, who are your most targeted recipients, what is the accuracy of the filtering that you have in Exchange at each stage of the process, how much is being caught by connection filtering over protocol filtering, and how much is caught by content filtering, and so on. You also have the ability to diagnose why something was determined as spam, so once you have something that is in the end user's junk mail folder, the user complains, in Exchange 2007 you can actually have the ability for administrators to look up that message and determine why exactly it was processed as spam. Some additional hygiene filters worth noting in Exchange 2007 are attachment stripping. This will be removing attachments on the edge based on file size, based on MIME properties or extension of the file. We'll also be looking at zip manifests, so if they'll be able to sniff out and look at offending files that are inside zip files, and then strip the zip files as well. Pretty smart stuff. From a transport rule perspective, Exchange has the ability to defend against virus outbreaks, even before signature updates happen. And that's about having transport rules right on the edge that allow an administrator to set up a very quick set of etiquettes to drop a given mail that has a particular pattern that we have identified. Finally, you can define what action to take with a blocked message. You can reject the message, accept the message, and stamp it with an indicator that it's been blocked. Or you can pass the message to a quarantine queue for administrative intervention. This allows you to fine-tune your anti-spam. Let's put this all together. If you think of anti-spam and anti-phishing initiatives in Wave 12, it's a holistic approach, and it goes from Exchange 2007 down to Outlook 2007. And it has all three stages. It has the connection filtering, protocol filtering, and content filtering that we mentioned, and finally the junk mail folder in Outlook, which adds a fourth layer, quickly running through them. Connection filtering filters by using real-time block lists, rule-based block list, and global accept-deny exception list. Protocol filtering works by using sender and recipient filtering, sender ID, and SMTP command tar pitting. Content filtering uses anti-spam, anti-phishing, per-user OU spam preferences, international domain support, computational puzzle validation. Outlook provides a safe sender, safe recipients list, block senders and anti-phishing support. Again, thinking about this combination, this four-stage approach, it's a pretty complete enterprise solution for anti-spam and anti-phishing. A comparison of the feature set between the various releases of Exchange starting with 2003, RTM, and ending with Exchange 2007 brings up some interesting differences. For example, in Exchange Server 2003 Service Pack 1, content filtering was added. In Service Pack 2, sender IT was introduced, as well as bi-weekly updates that has already increased the accuracy quite dramatically in Exchange 2003. If you compare this with Exchange 2007, the accuracy and capability of anti-spam defenses and anti-spam phishing, including the ability to update the filters and the data more than once a day, this will definitely increase accuracy dramatically. IP safe lists are now supported, as well as protocol analysis, dynamic spam data update services, per user per OU configuration. Dramatic improvements across the board, then. With the acquisition of FrontBridge and the launch of Microsoft Exchange Hosted Services, Microsoft can also provide a tightly integrated hosted package for users that want it. This is of special interest to SMEs who want the protection of a clean message stream, the safety of a disaster recovery infrastructure, and help with archiving and regulatory compliance, perhaps don't have the budget or IT infrastructure to provide this in-house. But they could use hosted services and have all that handled for them. Exchange Hosted Service consists of four services. Exchange Hosted Filtering provides antivirus anti-spam filtering, policy enforcement and disaster recovery. Multiple antivirus engines sweep messages addressed to your organization. These antivirus engines update with new virus definitions continuously, protecting against new virus outbreak. Multiple anti-spam engines, assisted around the clock by anti-spam experts, continually monitor email addresses to your organization. The engine routes spam to a quarantine folder for operational inspection. You can configure email notification as new content arrives in the quarantine folder. Exchange Hosted Filtering helps you conform to government regulations regarding email. You can use a policy rule writer to define policies to monitor and manage emails on any aspect of the message metadata, including specific text patterns, sender, originating IP, and other attributes. The service can ensure that if you lose your internet connection or email server, you will not lose any email messages. The service queues email for up to 5 days, and when your email server is back online, the Exchange Hosted Filtering Service forwards the queued messages. Exchange Hosted Services provides messages archive and search facilities, and message continuity for when your own server is down. The Exchange Hosted Archive captures and copies email messages that pass through your Exchange Hosted Service network, either on the way to and from your organization. Powerful search tools enable you to perform message search and retrieval when necessary. The Exchange Hosted Archive benefits from the antivirus and anti-spam features of the Hosted Filtering Service. Aside from archive capabilities, the service can also produce messaging continuity when your email system is unavailable. Your users can use the web-based interface to work with emails until your system is back online. Exchange Hosted Filtering Service defines rules for encrypting messages in transit from your organization. Messages flow to the service gateway through a transport layer security, TLS, encrypted tunnel. Upon arrival at the gateway, the service manages the process of issuing a private key to the recipient on a message and of making the key available when the recipient decrypts the message. These processes are entirely transparent to the originator of the message. When a recipient receives an encrypted message, he or she completes a simple process with the Exchange Hosted Encryption Service to verify the recipient's identity. This process is transparent to the originator of the message. Lastly, Exchange Hosted Continuity provides rollback and recovery solutions and message continuity. The service makes a 30-day rolling email repository available by using the Exchange Hosted Archive Store. If your internet connection or email server fails at any time, your users can access this repository to work with their email until your system is back online. You can perform restore operations from the rolling repository should you need to do so. With a combination of hosted services and Exchange 2007, you can have the best of both worlds. We'll take a quick look at antivirus tools before we return to the agenda. We looked at the benefits of handling anti-spam out on the edge, and the same applies for antivirus control. Why wait until the message hits the store before taking action? So the attachment filtering takes care of this out on the edge transport server. To be sure everything is safe, messages passed internally, even though from users in the same store, are filtered at the hub. And to maintain backwards compatibility with the legacy scanning systems that function at the mailbox, product group has maintained support for VS API 2.5. Poison messages are known for causing servers to crash and possible being unable to start up again. Poison message hits the Edge server, the message will be placed in the poison message queue. Service will not crash due to the poisonous message. The antivirus protection, the Exchange product group have now been working with the leading players in the antivirus market, McAfee, Trend and others, making sure the Exchange 2007 will work well with their products. With the acquisition by Microsoft of Sabari late last year, it is expected that with RTM there will be an Exchange 2007 optimized release. But it's possible that Microsoft will improve Sabari antivirus on the Exchange 2007 product CD. Let's return to the agenda. Exchange Server 2007 provides features that help you to comply with the legal requirements and corporate messaging policies. In this second section, we'll talk about regulatory compliance and how these features are going to make being compliant much easier. Recent accounting scandals have forced governments to create legislation that requires companies to retain email messages for specific periods and to produce these messages upon request. The period that you must retain messages can vary, but it can be from 3 to 6 years. Some legislation requires that you keep the message metadata, subject, sender, recipient dates, easily accessible and provide a mechanism for searching and retrieval of relevant messages upon request by the authorized legal authority. Outside the legal requirements, your organization may want to screen email messages to ensure they do not contain inappropriate content. You may also want to add legal disclaimers to outgoing communication. You may decide that certain messages require intellectual property disclosure. Exchange Server 2007 produced a number of features to help you comply with both legal and corporate policies. Let's take a look at them. As an administrator, you want to minimize the long-term storage of messages because they consume valuable storage space. However, to remain compliant, you must store messages for a designated period. In addition, you must provide a mechanism for easy search and for retrieval of relevant messages. The email lifecycle provides these facilities. It preserves messages only for as long as required. Has enhanced search capabilities to help you locate the appropriate messages from within a large store. Transport agents provide you to enforce the other elements of your corporate messaging policy. The Hub Transport server can filter messages by using agents and, where appropriate, apply legal disclaimers, declare intellectual property rights, and filter message for content. The Hub Transport server provides the following agents for this purpose: Bridgehead Mail Flow Control Agent, Disclaimer Agent, Journaling Agent, Address Rewrite Agent, Attachment Filtering Agent. The Edge Transport Service uses an additional agent for providing message hygiene from untrusted networks. Together, these agents provide regulatory and legal compliance controls that do the following: provide regulatory ethical walls, provide for message retention and discovery, protect against personally identifiable information disclosure, apply handling instructions for regulated users, send copies to compliance officers for review. The agents also provide corporate policy controls to do the following: apply legal disclaimers to outbound messengers, protect against intellectual property disclosure, block offensive language in messages, apply permission controls to messages. Let's take a look at how these agents can be configured by using rules. The Bridgehead Flow Control Agent uses transport rules to filter and process messages in transferred through your organization. You can configure and enable transport rules using the Exchange Management Shell or the console. Rules have three scopes: internal, agents filter messages from inside your own organization only; external, agents filter messages from outside your organization only; global, agents filter all messages. When you determine the scope of the rule, you must configure the three elements of the rule that define its functions. The conditions, these define which messages are caught by the filter. Conditions include being sent to or from certain people, being sent to or from members of a distribution list, or featuring specific words or text patterns in the subject, body, or message header. The actions, these define what will happen to the messages that have been caught in the filter actions, include silently dropping the message, redirecting the message to a specified address, copying or blind copying the message to a specified address, or logging the event. The exceptions. These define messages that should not have the actions performed on them that were caught by the defined conditions of the filter. For example, by using the copy or blind copy action, you can create an archive of messages as they travel through your organization. The journaling agent uses journal rules to filter and process messages in transit through your organization. Like transport rules, journal rules can have a global, internal, or external scope. You can journal all messages that meet the scope condition or only those addressed to or from a designated distribution list. The journal report consists of an email message defining the subject, message ID, sender, and recipient of the original message, together with an attachment containing the original message. Let's look at how to manage these transport and journal rules. You can create and manage rules using either Rules Wizard from the Exchange Management Console, as shown here, or by using the command in the shell. Rules can be enabled or disabled, and enabled in test mode. As part of your corporate messaging policy, you may be required to implement a message storage and retrieval policy. A number of features exist within the Exchange server to support this requirement, including the email lifecycle. The email lifecycle handles messages at rest, that is, not currently in transit through your organization. When you implement email lifecycle folders, also known as organizational folders, the mailbox server is responsible for the archive process. You can use either the Exchange Management Console or the Exchange Management Shell to implement email lifecycle folders. Email lifecycle folders provide the following functions: preserve messages for a specified period, delete messages when they are no longer needed, provide improved searches to locate specified messages in a large store, identify non-compliant messages, remove unnecessary data to manage storage more effectively, make policy enforcement as unobtrusive as possible. Before moving on to the last section on message security, let's run through a series of demonstrations to reinforce what we've just been discussing. In this first part of four demonstrations, we'll see how to copy messages to a named recipient for journaling purposes. Now we'll look at how to create a simple transport rule. First, you'll see which transport agents are currently running. You do this from the shell. If you type in the simple get transport agent command, you can see that the command returns four items. If you wanted to capture copies of email messages in transit, you can do that by using either the transport agent, which we'll do in a moment, or by using the journal agent. It's more usual to use the journal agent to archive messages in your organization, as the transport agent requires more specific configuration. However, we'll use the transport agent for this demo. Firstly, we'll create the transport rule. To do this, we'll go to the Hub Transport Settings in the Organization Configuration Work Center. From the action pane, we click New Transport Rule, enter the appropriate name here and the valid description. In this case, we want to track all messages that Claire receives, so we'll enter relevant comment. A transport rule consists of three elements: conditions, which determine which messages are to be trapped, an action, which determines what the agent is to do with the trapped message, and any exceptions, those messages that meet the specified conditions of the rule, but we don't want the action performed on. We define the conditions first, in this case by setting messages sent to people, and then selecting which people, in this case, Claire. Next, we need to define the action, so we'll choose blind copy, and select Spencer's mailbox as the recipient of the blind copy. We could define exceptions next, if necessary, but we don't need any, so we'll continue to create the rule. Now let's test it. We'll open OWA and send a message to Claire. Now, let's switch to OWA as Spencer Lowe and locate that copied message. You can use the transport rules to do far more than copy messages for journaling purposes. The journal agent is probably better suited for that anyway. You need to create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content doesn't enter or leave your organization. We'll look at that in the next demo, but for now let's return to the presentation. In this two-step demo, we'll look at how to prevent two users from communicating sensitive information to one another. Holly Holt and Peter Houston are assigned to projects with clients Wingtip Toys and Trey Research. Because these clients compete with each other, and Holly Holt and Peter Houston process highly sensitive information about clients' projects, it is a compliance requirement that they be enabled to send email messages to each other. We're going to configure a global rule that prohibits these two users from sending emails to each other. But we'll make an exception for emergencies and social interaction, and we'll meet this requirement by allowing only email messages that have the word emergency or social in the subject line. First, let's verify that they can communicate normally. Then we'll open Outlook web access for Holly Holt. Now we create a quick test. Press Ctrl plus K to autocomplete Peter's address, then enter the subject information about wingtip projects. And then we type some body text and click send. Let's see if Peter got the message. We open OWA as Peter. There's the message Holly shouldn't really be sending us. Let's send him one back. They're exchanging confidential client information that shouldn't be shared. We need to prevent that. Let's start by creating a transport rule, which we learned how to do in the last demonstration. First, we go to the console, switch the hub transport settings in the organizational folder. Now, we'll create the rule. Let's give it a meaningful name. And then let's enter the comment Ethical Firewall, configured to restrict mail between Holly Holt and Peter Houston. Let's now define the conditions. In the From People area, select Holly. Then in the Sent to People area, select Peter. Now we'll define the action. We're going to bounce the message back to the sender with a meaningful message such as, "Due to compliance restrictions, you are prohibited from contacting this person." That's self-explanatory. We want to let them communicate in particular circumstances, however, so we'll do that with the exception. Remember, we are going to let messages through with the words social or emergency in the subject line. The wizard walks us through the process. Next, we'll review the settings. Everything looks good, so we'll complete the rule. Of course, we need to do this in both directions. We'll create a new transport rule. We'll call this rule Wall, Peter Houston and Holly Holt. Now let's define the conditions. We select Peter in the Select Senders dialog box, and then select the recipient, in this case Holly. Again, we define the action as a bounce. And explain to the sender what's happening. We'll use the same exceptions as before. We'll quickly review the settings again. They look fine, so we'll have the wizard create the rule. Let's go back and send a test message from Holly to Peter. we'll type advice on the wingtip project in the subject line. Then, for the body of the message, we'll type, please can you give us some advice on the wingtip project? Let's send that. Peter doesn't get the message. If we switch back to Holly's mailbox and check for new messages, we can see that it's blocked. Now let's see if we can set up a social event. Peter is having a barbecue and wants Holly to help with the chicken wings. Let's select Holly as a recipient. In the subject line, we'll type the keyword social and then company barbecue on Saturday. In the body of the message, we'll type you are invited to the company barbecue. Now, we send the message. Now let's see if the transport server lets that one through. We open Holly's mailbox, check for new messages. And there it is. Let's try sending a message to Peter in the subject line. We'll type emergency, the other keyword, and then flood on the second floor. In the body of the message, we'll type, please cover all equipment with plastic. Now send the message. If we switch to Peter's mailbox, we can see that the message was allowed through. Let's exit OWA. In this third demo, we'll look at the email lifecycle. In this demo, we'll create email lifecycle content settings for the organizational folder to ensure that email messages in the folder expire after 2 years. Let's start by opening up the console. We'll click the New Email Lifecycle Organization folder link in the Action pane. Let's enter the folder name, Trey Research Project. Then we'll enter a comment that Outlook users will see when they view the folder. Then we'll type, all items related to Trey Research Project should be posted here and retained for 2 years. We'll prevent Outlook users from minimizing that comment and then create the folder. Let's configure content to expire after 2 years or 731 days. Click the folder and then click the content settings link in the action pane. We'll select all items from the message type list and then enter the expiration period, 731 days. We want that to be effective as soon as the item arrives in the folder, so we'll select the relevant option. Once the item expires, we want to permanent delete it rather than move it to deleted items, so we select that option as well. Then we give these settings a name, such as preserve for 2 years. We don't want to autocopy the content, so we'll just click next. Then we review settings. And then click Finish to create the content settings. Once that's established, we need to create and link the email lifecycle mailbox policy to the folder we've just created. We'll give the mailbox policy the name Trey Research Project Policy, and then we'll add the folder we've just created to this policy, Trey Research Project. Then we create the mailbox policy. Now we want to link the policy to Peter's mailbox. We'll do this from the shell. The set mailbox commands produces no output. If we don't link the default policy will apply. Obviously, we can link the policy to multiple mailbox, but for the demonstration purposes, we'll limit this to Peter's mailbox. Next, we want to specify the ELC schedule. This specifies the interval at which email lifecycle expiration occurs. No output is returned from this command. Finally, we need to restart the Exchange Mailbox Assistant service. OK, let's minimize the shell and see what this looks like from the user's mailbox. Let's open up OWA as Peter. Click the Organizational Folder link and you can see the Tray Research Project folder. Let's expand that and move a message from the inbox to the Organizational folder. You can search for messages related to the project and drag them to the Tray Research folder. If need be, you can verify that they are there. By creating email lifecycle content settings, you can ensure that content is kept for as long as is needed, and no longer. In the final demo, we're going to see how you create a journal rule for message archive and compliance. In the first demonstration, we looked at how to capture a copy of messages in transit through the organization using transport rules. Let's now contrast that with using the journal's agent as a journal rule. Let's open the shell and see what agents we have running with the get transport agent command. We can see that both the transport rule agent and the journal agent are running. Now let's create a journal rule. Unlike transport rules, journal rules have only a single optional condition, a distribution list condition. Either all messages are captured by the rule, or only messages addressed to or from a specified distribution list are captured. There are also no actions that are configurable, since all messages are sent to a designated email address. If we enter the command new journal rule and use the journal mail address switch to define where the messages should be copied, in this case spencer@nwtraders.com, then use the name switch to name our rule. That will capture a copy of all messages and send them to Spencer for further processing. Now we need to enable the rule. Now we can test it if we connect OWA to Claire and send a test message to Holly. We can see that Spencer received a copy of the message. The original message is an attachment to this journal report message. In the summary report, you can view the originator and the recipient before looking at the original message if you want. In this section, we'll take a close look at how messages can be kept secure whilst in transit, whether that communication has been regular correspondence or infrequent ones. As we saw at the beginning of this session, a lot of Microsoft customers complained that it's difficult to manage message security, PKI infrastructures, managing certificates or key management. It needs to be easier, otherwise people don't use it. Exchange Server provides a solution for establishing and maintaining a level of security and confidentiality. That doesn't require your IT staff to manage and maintain any sort of certificate infrastructure. It provides everything you need. This simple approach to encryption and authentication is provided as follows. A secure channel between edge servers is established automatically by using information available in DNS. An encrypted SMTP channel is established using built-in keys with no PKI dependency. Although there is no optional support for existing PKI deployments, and also optional support for public key certificate authorities for third-party authentication of keys. The Edge Server message security ensures that the identity of the sender is accurate and authentic, that the email is read-only by the intended recipients, and that the email is protected from unauthorized tampering and/or disclosure. All this means that you can achieve simple security while communicating with everyone. Let's take a closer look at this. By default, Exchange Server authenticates and encrypts all messages sent between recipients in the same organization. Exchange Server uses Kerberos and Transport Layer Security, TLS, to provide the authentication and encryption. Because inter-organizational messaging requires certificate-based authentication and TLS encryption, there has to be some mechanism in place to provide these things. Inter-organization messages fall into two categories: business-to-business messages and ad hoc messages. Both ad hoc message security and managed message security requires that you configure your public-facing DNS servers that have the public encryption and signing keys that are generated by Exchange Server 2007. The DNS configuration consists of updating your primary DNS zone with a text record that Exchange Server 2007 transport service will query before sending email. Let's look at both of these situations. In the ad hoc case, if a destination enterprise has updated their DNS with a correctly formatted DNS record, called a message security DNS record, Exchange Server 2007 transport service encrypts a message by using the public encryption key that is listed in the message security DNS record. Exchange Server 2007 transport service also signs the outbound message. When it receives the signed and encrypted message, the destination Exchange Server 2007 transport agents look up your organization signing verification key in your message security DNS record and validate the signature. Like ordinary email delivery, ad hoc message security relies on DNS. Therefore, the ad hoc message security scenario provides messages, confidentiality, integrity, and authentication for whoever controls DNS for a particular domain. From a threat perspective, the ad hoc scenario is most vulnerable to what is known as DNS poisoning attack, in which a malicious user somehow publishes records, including key records, into the public DNS service for a domain. As one consequence of such a DNS poisoning attack, messages that were sent to the compromised domain would be encrypted to the attacker's key and therefore could be decrypted by the attacker. Because such an attack is different to accomplish and easy to detect, this ad hoc security provides a significant improvement in message security with minimal management overhead. For business correspondence, much greater assurance can be achieved with this ad hoc message security. However, this scenario also illustrates the value of a greater level of assurance that the public signing and encryption keys are, in fact, valid. Let's run through that with managed message security. Like the ad hoc message security scenario, the managed business-to-business message security scenario could be compromised by a DNS poisoning attack. If a malicious user could replace the public encryption and signing keys in the message security DNS records, however, unlike the ad hoc scenario where the public keys are retrieved on each new SMTP connection to a remote domain, the business-to-business scenario relies on keys that are stored in the Exchange Server 2000 message security configuration after they are retrieved. Therefore, it is best practice to validate all keys manually when you set up a message security association with a remote domain. This manual verification only has to occur when you set up the initial association. All subsequent key updates from partner domains are signed by the initial key that you have manually validated. Therefore, the longer a partnership is maintained with a remote domain, the stronger the assurance an administrator can provide as to the authenticity of the remote domain. When you configure business-to-business message security, you can optimize message exchange between your partners by disabling message hygiene agents. Additionally, business-to-business message security lets you specify levels of security claims for specific partners. For example, if you have determined that a particular business partner requires a higher level of authentication for senders of mail within the organization, or if you have manually verified a business partner's public encryption and signing keys, you can assign a higher assurance of authenticity to messages that come from that organization. Future versions of Exchange Server 2007 and other third-party vendors may produce transport agents or client behavior that can act upon messages that are marked as having elevated authenticity. The three main topics we addressed today were firstly, message hygiene. Your email system is constantly being bombarded with unwanted and undesirable messages, and as a messaging administrator, it's your job to clean that up. Exchange Server 2007 is here to make that job easier. We took a look at how, in the first section, we covered filtering on the edge, combined with Outlook features, and how these created a four-layer approach to anti-spam control. We then went on to discuss messaging policies. Following on from recent accounting scandals and the global terrorism threat, governments and their agencies require organizations to store and produce on request pertinent email messages. Exchange Server 2007 provides policies to achieve this goal with simple to set up and administer policies. We looked at transport and journal rules, and a series of demos reinforced the message that policy-based compliance is easy to establish and manage with Exchange Server 2007. Finally, we looked at how messages can be made secure whilst in transit through your organization, between organizations and across untrusted networks like the internet. That concludes the main part of the session. Now we'll give you some information on additional reading, support, and help on Exchange Server 2007. To get more information on the products and technologies we have covered today, we have some online resources available that can help you. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. You can also visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/ITProExc103 for more information on books, courses, certifications and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Pressbooks, workshops, clinic, and Microsoft Skills Assessment, MOC, is offered in an instructor-led environment and offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals in supporting and implementing solutions using the Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Getting Started with Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Clinic, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It is an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short, 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and all VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the availability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft Certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals. It is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to go on to become a fully certified systems administrator, MCSA, or a system engineer, MCSE, or a desktop specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certifications covers SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Carolyn McGrath, IT Professional Marketing Manager, to cover these changes in more detail.
For IT professionals, all the resources in the TechNet program will give you the support you need to be successful with our technology. Whether you are deploying new software, managing a server environment, or troubleshooting, TechNet has a resource for you. Use the web for immediate access to documentation, knowledge base, scripts, downloads, and more. Webcasts and events will give you deep insight into specific technology topics. Keep up to date with technology news using the TechNet Flash. This is a twice-monthly newsletter that you can customize to give you information about the specific technology that interests you. With more time to read, the TechNet magazine is an excellent resource offering in-depth articles written by industry-leading technologists. If you want to ensure that you have all of the essential resources at your fingertips, the TechNet subscription is for you. It includes full version software and betas so that you can evaluate our technology at your own pace. No time bombs, so your product analysis won't time out. It includes two complimentary telephone support incidents. Talk to Microsoft technical professionals to help you with whatever challenges you may encounter with the software. That is $500 worth of value. The TechNet subscription is a great value to all IT professionals. Finally, we have TechNet VLabs. Use this to get your hands on the technology in a hosted environment. You can explore how it works, run different scenarios, and have a full product experience without having to dedicate your time to deploy and manage the hardware to do so yourself. Overall, the TechNet program has all of the resources you need to get the most out of Microsoft technology. TechNet Plus subscription. What is it? Get hands-on experience with the technology through software and betas, including Office, Windows, and servers. Support when you need it, including two free telephone support incidents. Easy access to information via updates, utilities, white papers, knowledge base, and more. Work on your skills at your own pace. E-learning courses and training. The TechNet Plus subscription. That's what it is. Need support? Answers are standing by. You have a choice of three support offerings from Microsoft. Firstly, we have online and self-help. Choose from the TechNet website, the Security Center Online, Knowledge Base, Product Support Centers, the TechNet Script Center, News Groups, User Groups, and the TechNet Plus subscription. Secondly, we have assisted incidents. Assisted incidents include email support, phone support, phone support contracts, advisory services. Finally, contract-based support. Contract-based support is offered to organizations and consists of premier support or essential support. Thank you for listening to this TechNet session.